Chapter 5 Robert Jordan pushed aside the saddle blanket that hung over the mouth of the cave, and stepping out, took a deep breath of the cold night air. The mist had cleared away, and the stars were out. There was no wind, and outside now of the warm air of the cave, heavy with smoke of both tobacco and charcoal, with the odor of cooked rice and meat, saffron, pimentos, and oil, the tarry, wine-spilled smell of the big skin hung beside the door, hung by the neck and the forelegs extended, wine drawn from a plug fitted in one leg, wine that spilled a little onto the earth of the floor, settling the dust smell. Out now from the odors of different herbs whose names he did not know that hung in bunches from the ceiling, with long ropes of garlic. Away now from the copper penny red wine and garlic, horse sweat and man sweat dried in the clothing, acrid and gray the man sweat, sweet and sickly the dried brushed off lather of horse sweat. Of the men at the table, Robert Jordan breathed deeply of the clear night air of the mountains that smelled of the pines and of the dew on the grass in the meadow by the stream. Dew had fallen heavily since the wind had dropped, but as he stood there, he thought there would be frost by morning. As he stood breathing deep and then listening to the night, he heard first firing far away, and then he heard an owl cry in the timber below where the horse corral was slung. Then inside the cave he could hear the gypsy starting to sing, and the soft chording of a guitar.
"I had an inheritance from my father,"
the artificially hardened voice rose harshly and hung there, then went on.
"It was the moon and the sun, and though I roam all over the world, the spending of it's never done."
The guitar thudded with chorded applause for the singer.
"Good," Robert Jordan heard someone say. "Give us the Catalan, gypsy."
"No." "Yes, yes, the Catalan."
"All right,"
the gypsy said, and sang mournfully.
"My nose is flat, my face is black, but still I am a man."
"Olé," someone said. "Go on, gypsy."
The gypsy's voice rose tragically and mockingly.
"Thank God I am a Negro, and not a Catalan."
"There is much noise," Pablo's voice said. "Shut up, gypsy."
"Yes," he heard the woman's voice. "There is too much noise. You could call the Guardia Civil with that voice, and still it has no quality."
"I know another verse,"
the gypsy said, and the guitar commenced. "Save it," the woman told him. The guitar stopped.
"I am not good in voice tonight, so there is no loss," the gypsy said.
And pushing the blanket aside, he came out into the dark. Robert Jordan watched him walk over to a tree and then come toward him.
"Roberto,"
the gypsy said softly.
"Yes, Raphael," he said.
He knew the gypsy had been affected by the wine from his voice. He himself had drunk the two absinths and some wine, but his head was clear and cold from the strain of the difficulty with Pablo.
"Why didst thou not kill Pablo?"
the gypsy said very softly. "Why kill him?"
"You have to kill him sooner or later. Why did you not approve of the moment?"
"Do you speak seriously?"
"What do you think they all waited for? What do you think the woman sent the girl away for? Do you believe that it is possible to continue after what has been said?"
"That you all should kill him."
"Que va,"
the gypsy said quietly.
"That is your business. 3 or 4 times we waited for you to kill him. Pablo has no friends."
"I had the idea," Robert Jordan said, "but I left it."
"Surely all could see that. Everyone noted your preparations. Why didn't you do it?"
"I thought it might molest you others, or the woman."
"Que va! And the woman waiting as a whore waits for the flight of the big bird. Thou art younger than thou appearest."
"It is possible."
"Kill him now,"
the gypsy urged. "That is to assassinate."
"Even better,"
the gypsy said very softly.
"Less danger. Go on. Kill him now."
"I cannot in that way. It is repugnant to me, and it is not how one should act for the cause."
"Provoke him, then,"
the gypsy said.
"But you have to kill him. There is no remedy."
As they spoke, the owl flew between the trees with the softness of all silence, dropping past them, then rising, the wings beating quickly, but with no noise of feathers moving as the bird hunted.
"Look at him,"
the gypsy said in the dark.
Thus should men move.
And in the day, blind in a tree with crows around him, Robert Jordan said.
Rarely,
said the gypsy,
and then by hazard. Kill him,
he went on.
Do not let it become difficult.
Now the moment is past.
Provoke it,
the gypsy said,
or take advantage of the quiet.
The blanket that closed the cave door opened and light came out. Someone came toward where they stood.
It is a beautiful night, the man said in a heavy, dull voice. We will have good weather. It was Pablo.
He was smoking one of the Russian cigarettes, and in the glow, as he drew on the cigarette, his round face showed. They could see his heavy, long-armed body in the starlight.
Do not pay any attention to the woman, he said to Robert Jordan.
In the dark, the cigarette glowed bright, then showed in his hand as he lowered it.
She is difficult sometimes. She is a good woman, very loyal to the Republic.
The light of the cigarette jerked slightly now as he spoke. He must be talking with it in the corner of his mouth, Robert Jordan thought.
We should have no difficulties. We are of accord. I am glad you have come.
The cigarette glowed brightly.
Pay no attention to arguments, he said. You are very welcome here. Excuse me now, he said. I go to see how they have picketed the horses.
He went off through the trees to the edge of the meadow, and they heard a horse nicker from below.
You see, the gypsy said, now you see? In this way has the moment escaped.
Robert Jordan said nothing.
I go down there,
the gypsy said angrily. To do what?
Kewa to do what? At least to prevent him leaving.
Can he leave with a horse from below?
No.
Then go to the spot where you can prevent him.
Augustine is there.
Go then, and speak with Augustine. Tell him that which has happened.
Augustine will kill him with pleasure.
Less bad, Robert Jordan said. Go then above, and tell him all as it happened.
And then?
I go to look below in the meadow.
Good, man, good.
He could not see Raphael's face in the dark, but he could feel him smiling.
Now you have tightened your garters,
the gypsy said approvingly. Go to Augustine, Robert Jordan said to him.
Yes, Roberto, yes,
said the gypsy. Robert Jordan walked through the pines, feeling his way from tree to tree to the edge of the meadow, looking across it in the darkness, lighter here in the open from the starlight. He saw the dark bulks of the picketed horses. He counted them where they were scattered between him and the stream. There were five. Robert Jordan sat down at the foot of a pine tree and looked out across the meadow. I am tired, he thought, and perhaps my judgment is not good. But my obligation is the bridge, and to fulfill that, I must take no useless risk of myself until I complete that duty. Of course, it is sometimes more of a risk not to accept chances which are necessary to take, but I have done this so far, trying to let the situation take its own course. If it is true, as the gypsy says, that they expected me to kill Pablo, then I should have done that. But it was never clear to me that they did expect that. For a stranger to kill where he must work with the people afterwards is very bad. It may be done in action, and it may be done if backed by sufficient discipline. But in this case, I think it would be very bad, although it was a temptation and seemed a short and simple way. But I do not believe anything is that short nor that simple in this country. And while I trust the woman absolutely, I could not tell how she would react to such a drastic thing. One dying in such a place can be very ugly, dirty, and repugnant. You could not tell how she would react. Without the woman, there is no organization nor any discipline here. And with the woman, it can be very good. It would be ideal if she would kill him, or if the gypsy would, but he will not, or if the sentry Augustine would. Anselmo will, if I ask it, though he says he is against all killing. He hates him, I believe, and he already trusts me, and believes in me as a representative of what he believes in. Only he and the woman really believe in the Republic, as far as I can see. But it is too early to know that yet. As his eyes became used to the starlight, he could see that Pablo was standing by one of the horses. The horse lifted his head from grazing, then dropped it impatiently. Pablo was standing by the horse, leaning against him, moving with him as he swung with the length of the picket rope and patting him on the neck. The horse was impatient at the tenderness while he was feeding. Robert Jordan could not see what Pablo was doing, nor hear what he was saying to the horse, but he could see that he was neither unpicketing nor saddling. He sat watching him, trying to think his problem out clearly.
"Thou, my big, good little pony," Pablo was saying to the horse in the dark. It was the big bay stallion he was speaking to. "Thou lovely white-faced big beauty, thou with the big neck arching like the viaduct of my pueblo," he stopped, "but arching more and much finer."
The horse was snatching grass, swinging his head sideways as he pulled, annoyed by the man and his talking.
"Thou art no woman, nor a fool," Pablo told the bay horse. "Thou, O thou, thee, thee, my big little pony, thou art no woman like a rock that is burning. Thou art no colt of a girl with cropped head and the movement of a foal still wet from its mother. Thou dost not insult nor lie nor not understand. Thou, O thee, O my good big little pony."
It would have been very interesting for Robert Jordan to have heard Pablo speaking to the bay horse, but he did not hear him because now, convinced that Pablo was only down checking on his horses, and having decided that it was not a practical move to kill him at this time, he stood up and walked back to the cave. Pablo stayed in the meadow talking to the horse for a long time. The horse understood nothing that he said, only from the tone of the voice that they were endearments, and he had been in the corral all day and was hungry now, grazing impatiently at the limits of his picket rope, and the man annoyed him. Pablo shifted the picket pin finally and stood by the horse, not talking now. The horse went on grazing, and was relieved now that the man did not bother him. Chapter 6. Inside the cave, Robert Jordan sat on one of the rawhide stools in a corner by the fire listening to the woman. She was washing the dishes, and the girl, Maria, was drying them and putting them away, kneeling to place them in the hollow dug in the wall that was used as a shelf.
"It is strange," she said, "that El Sordo has not come. He should have been here an hour ago."
"Did you advise him to come?"
"No, he comes each night."
"Perhaps he is doing something, some work."
"It is possible," she said. "If he does not come, we must go to see him tomorrow."
"Yes. Is it far from here?"
"No. It will be a good trip. I lack exercise."
"Can I go?" Maria asked. "May I go too, Pilar?"
"Yes, beautiful," the woman said, then turning her big face.
"Isn't she pretty?" she asked Robert Jordan. "How does she seem to thee? A little thin?"
"To me she seems very well," Robert Jordan said. Maria filled his cup with wine.
"Drink that," she said. "It will make me seem even better. It is necessary to drink much of that for me to seem beautiful."
"Then I had better stop," Robert Jordan said. "Already thou seemest beautiful and more."
"That's the way to talk," the woman said. "You talk like the good ones."
"What more does she seem?"
"Intelligent," Robert Jordan said lamely. Maria giggled, and the woman shook her head sadly.
"How well you begin, and how it ends, Don Roberto."
"Don't call me Don Roberto."
"It is a joke. Here we say Don Pablo for a joke, as we say the Signorita Maria for a joke."
"I don't joke that way," Robert Jordan said. "Camarada to me is what all should be called with seriousness in this war. In the joking commences a rottenness."
"Thou art very religious about thy politics," the woman teased him. "Thou makest no jokes?"
"Yes, I care much for jokes, but not in the form of a dress. It is like a flag."
"I could make jokes about a flag, any flag," the woman laughed. "To me no one can joke of anything. The old flag of yellow and gold we called pus and blood. The flag of the Republic with the purple added, we call blood, pus, and permanganate. It is a joke."
"He is a communist," Maria said. "They are very serious gente."
"Are you a communist?"
"No, I am an anti-fascist."
"For a long time?"
"Since I have understood fascism."
"How long is that?"
"For nearly 10 years.
"That is not much time," the woman said. "I have been a Republican for 20 years. "My father was a Republican all his life," Maria said. "It was for that they shot him."
"My father was also a Republican all his life. Also my grandfather," Robert Jordan said.
"In what country?"
"The United States."
"Did they shoot them?" the woman asked.
"Que va," Maria said. "The United States is a country of Republicans. They don't shoot you for being a Republican there.
All the same, it is a good thing to have a grandfather who was a Republican, the woman said. It shows a good blood. My grandfather was on the Republican National Committee, Robert Jordan said. That impressed even Maria. And is thy father still active in the Republic? Pilar asked. No, he is dead. Can one ask how he died? He shot himself. To avoid being tortured? The woman asked. Yes, Robert Jordan said. To avoid being tortured. Maria looked at him with tears in her eyes. My father, she said, could not obtain a weapon. Well, I am very glad that your father had the good fortune to obtain a weapon. Yes, it was pretty lucky, Robert Jordan said. Should we talk about something else?
Then you and me, we are the same, Maria said.
She put her hand on his arm and looked in his face. He looked at her brown face and at the eyes that, since he had seen them, had never been as young as the rest of her face, but that now were suddenly hungry and young and wanting. You could be brother and sister by the look, the woman said, but I believe it is fortunate that you are not.
Now I know why I have felt as I have, Maria said. Now it is clear.
Que va, Robert Jordan said, and reaching over he ran his hand over the top of her head. He had been wanting to do that all day, and now he did it. He could feel his throat swelling. She moved her head under his hand and smiled up at him, and he felt the thick but silky roughness of the cropped head rippling between his fingers. Then his hand was on her neck, and then he dropped it.
Do it again, she said. I wanted you to do that all day.
Later, Robert Jordan said, and his voice was thick.
And me?
The woman of Pablo said in her booming voice.
I am expected to watch all this. I am expected not to be moved.
One cannot.
For fault of anything better, that Pablo should come back.
Maria took no notice of her now, nor of the others playing cards at the table by the candlelight.
Do you want another cup of wine, Roberto? She asked.
Yes, he said. Why not?
You're going to have a drunkard like I have, the woman of Pablo said, with that rare thing he drank in the cup and all. Listen to me, Inglés.
Not Inglés, American.
Listen then, American. Where do you plan to sleep?
Outside. I have a sleeping robe.
Good, she said. The night is clear?
And will be cold.
Outside then, she said. Sleep the outside. And thy materials can sleep with me.
Good, said Robert Jordan. Leave us for a moment, Robert Jordan said to the girl and put his hand on her shoulder.
Why?
I wish to speak to Pilar.
Must I go?
Yes.
What is it?
The woman of Pablo said, when the girl had gone over to the mouth of the cave where she stood by the big wineskin, watching the card players. The gypsy said, I should have, he began.
No, the woman interrupted.
He is mistaken.
If it is necessary that I...
Robert Jordan said quietly, but with difficulty.
Thee would have done it, I believe, the woman said.
Nay, it is not necessary. I was watching thee, but thy judgment was good. But if it is needful...
No, the woman said. I tell you it is not needful. The mind of the gypsy is corrupt.
But in weakness a man can be a great danger.
No, thou dost not understand. Out of this one has passed all capacity for danger.
I do not understand.
Thou art very young still, she said. You will understand.
Then to the girl,
Come, Maria.
We are not talking more. The girl came over and Robert Jordan reached his hand out and patted her head. She stroked under his hand like a kitten. Then he thought that she was going to cry, but her lips drew up again and she looked at him and smiled.
Thee would do well to go to bed now, the woman said to Robert Jordan. Thou hast had a long journey.
Good, said Robert Jordan. I will get my things.
Chapter 7 He was asleep in the robe, and he had been asleep, he thought, for a long time. The robe was spread on the forest floor in the lee of the rocks beyond the cave mouth, and as he slept, he turned, and turning, rolled on his pistol, which was fastened by a lanyard to one wrist, and had been by his side under the cover when he went to sleep, shoulder and back weary, leg tired, his muscles pulled with tiredness so that the ground was soft, and simply stretching in the robe against the flannel lining was voluptuous with fatigue. Waking, he wondered where he was, knew, and then shifted the pistol from under his side and settled happily to stretch back into sleep, his hand on the pillow of his clothing that was bundled neatly around his rope-soled shoes. He had one arm around the pillow. Then he felt her hand on his shoulder and turned quickly, his right hand holding the pistol under the robe. "Oh, it is thee," he said, and dropping the pistol he reached both arms up and pulled her down. With his arms around her he could feel her shivering. "Get in," he said softly. "It is cold out there."
"No, I must not."
"Get in," he said, "and we can talk about it later." She was trembling, and he held her wrist now with one hand and held her lightly with the other arm. She had turned her head away. "Get in, little rabbit," he said, and kissed her on the back of the neck.
"I am afraid."
"No, do not be afraid. Get in."
"How?"
"Just slip in. There is much room. Do you want me to help you?"
"No,"
she said. And then she was in the robe, and he was holding her tight to him, and trying to kiss her lips, and she was pressing her face against the pillow of clothing, but holding her arms close around his neck. Then he felt her arms relax, and she was shivering again as he held her. "No," he said, and laughed. "Do not be afraid. That is the pistol." He lifted it and slipped it behind him.
"I am ashamed," she said, her face away from him.
"No, you must not be. Here. Now."
"No, I must not. I am ashamed and frightened."
"No, my rabbit. Please."
"I must not. If thou dost not love me."
"I love thee."
"I love thee. Oh, I love thee. Put thy hand on my head,"
she said away from him, her face still in the pillow. He put his hand on her head and stroked it, and then suddenly her face was away from the pillow, and she was in his arms, pressed close against him, and her face was against his, and she was crying. He held her still and close, feeling the long length of the young body, and he stroked her head and kissed the wet saltiness of her eyes, and as she cried he could feel the rounded, firm-pointed breasts touching through the shirt she wore.
"I cannot kiss," she said. "I do not know how."
"There is no need to kiss."
"Yes, I must kiss. I must do everything."
"There is no need to do anything. We are all right. But thou hast many clothes."
"What should I do?"
"I will help you."
"Is that better?"
"Yes, much." "It is not better to thee?"
"Yes, much better." "And I can go with thee, as Pilar said?"
"Yes."
"But not to a home, with thee?"
"No, to a home."
"No, no, no, with thee, and I will be thy woman."
Now as they lay, all that before had been shielded was unshielded. Where there had been roughness of fabric, all was smooth, with a smoothness and firm rounded pressing, and a long warm coolness, cool outside and warm within, long and light and closely holding, closely held, lonely, hollow-making with contours, happy-making, young and loving, and now all warmly smooth, with a hollowing, chest-aching, tight-held loneliness that was such that Robert Jordan felt he could not stand it, and he said, "Hast thou loved others?"
"Never."
Then suddenly going dead in his arms,
"But things were done to me."
"By whom?"
"By various."
Now she lay perfectly quietly, and as though her body were dead, and turned her head away from him.
"Now you will not love me."
"I love you," he said. But something had happened to him, and she knew it.
"No,"
she said, and her voice had gone dead and flat.
"Thou wilt not love me. But perhaps thou wilt take me to the home, and I will go to the home, and I will never be thy woman nor anything."
"I love thee, Maria."
"No, it is not true," she said.
Then, as a last thing, pitifully and hopefully,
"But I have never kissed any man."
"Then kiss me now."
"I wanted to," she said, "but I know not how. Where things were done to me, I fought until I could not see. I fought until one sat upon my head, and I bit him, and then they tied my mouth and held my arms behind my head, and others did things to me."
"I love thee, Maria," he said, "and no one has done anything to thee. Thee they cannot touch. No one has touched thee, little rabbit."
"You believe that?"
"I know it."
"And you can love me?"
warm again against him now. I can love thee more.
I will try to kiss thee very well.
Kiss me a little.
I do not know how.
Just kiss me. She kissed him on the cheek. No.
Where do the noses go? I always wondered where the noses would go.
Look, turn thy head. And then their mouths were tight together, and she lay close, pressed against him, and her mouth opened a little gradually. And then, suddenly, holding her against him, he was happier than he had ever been, lightly, lovingly, exultingly, innerly happy, and unthinking, and untired, and unworried, and only feeling a great delight, and he said,
My little rabbit, my darling, my sweet, my long lovely.
What do you say? She said, as though from a great distance away.
My lovely one, he said.
They lay there, and he felt her heart beating against his, and with the side of his foot he stroked very lightly against the side of hers.
Thee came barefooted, he said.
Yes.
Then thee knew thou wert coming to the bed.
Yes.
And you had no fear.
Yes, much. But more fear of how it would be to take my shoes off.
And what time is it now? Lo sabes?
No. Thou hast no watch?
Yes, but it is behind thy back.
Take it from there.
No.
Then look over my shoulder.
It was 1 o'clock. The dial showed bright in the darkness that the robe made.
Thy chin scratches my shoulder.
Pardon it. I have no tools to shave.
I like it. Is thy beard blonde?
Yes.
And will it be long?
Not before the bridge.
Maria, listen.
Dost thou...
Do I what?
Dost thou wish?
Yes, everything. Please. And if we do everything together, the other maybe never will have been.
Did you think of that?
No, I think it in myself, but Pilar told me.
She is very wise.
And another thing?
Maria said softly.
She said for me to tell you that I am not sick. She knows about such things, and she said to tell you that.
She told you to tell me?
Yes. I spoke to her and told her that I love you. I loved you when I saw you today, and I loved you always, but I never saw you before. And I told Pilar, and she said if I ever told you anything about anything, to tell you that I was not sick. The other thing she told me long ago, soon after the train.
What did she say?
She said that nothing is done to oneself that one does not accept, and that if I loved someone, it would take it all away. I wish to die, you see?
What she said is true.
And now I am happy that I did not die. I am so happy that I did not die. And you can love me?
Yes, I love you now.
And I can be thy woman?
I cannot have a woman doing what I do, but thou art my woman now.
If once I am, then I will keep on. Am I thy woman now?
Yes, Maria. Yes, my little rabbit. She held herself tight to him, and her lips looked for his and then found them and were against them, and he felt her, fresh, new and smooth, and young and lovely with the warm, scalding coolness, and unbelievable to be there in the robe that was as familiar as his clothes or his shoes or his duty. And then she said, frightenedly,
And now let us do quickly what it is we do, so that the other is all gone.
You want?
Yes,
she said almost fiercely.
Yes, yes, yes.
Chapter 8 It was cold in the night, and Robert Jordan slept heavily. Once he woke, and, stretching, realized that the girl was there, curled far down in the robe, breathing lightly and regularly. And in the dark, bringing his head in from the cold, the sky hard and sharp with stars, the air cold in his nostrils, he put his head under the warmth of the robe and kissed her smooth shoulder. She did not wake, and he rolled onto his side away from her, and with his head out of the robe in the cold again, lay awake a moment, feeling the long, seeping luxury of his fatigue, and then the smooth, tactile happiness of their two bodies touching. And then, as he pushed his legs out, deep as they would go in the robe, he slipped down steeply into sleep. He woke at first daylight, and the girl was gone. He knew it as he woke, and putting out his arm, he felt the robe warm where she had been.
He looked at the mouth of the cave where the blanket showed frost-rimmed and saw the thin gray smoke from the crack in the rocks that meant the kitchen fire was lighted. A man came out of the timber, a blanket worn over his head like a poncho. Robert Jordan saw it was Pablo and that he was smoking a cigarette. He's been down corralling the horses, he thought. Pablo pulled open the blanket and went into the cave without looking toward Robert Jordan. Robert Jordan felt with his hand the light frost that lay on the worn, spotted green balloon silk outer covering of the 5-year-old down robe, then settled into it again. Bueno, he said to himself, feeling the familiar caress of the flannel lining as he spread his legs wide, then drew them together, and then turned on his side so that his head would be away from the direction where he knew the sun would come. ¿Qué más da? I might as well sleep some more. He slept until the sound of airplane motors woke him. Lying on his back, he saw them, a fascist patrol of 3 Fiats, tiny, bright, fast-moving across the mountain sky, headed in the direction from which Anselmo and he had come yesterday. The 3 passed and then came 9 more, flying much higher in the minute, pointed formations of 3s, 3s, and 3s. Pablo and the gypsy were standing at the cave mouth, in the shadow, watching the sky, and as Robert Jordan lay still, the sky now full of the high, hammering roar of motors, there was a new droning roar, and 3 more planes came over at less than 1,000 feet above the clearing. These 3 were Heinkel 111s, twin motor bombers. Robert Jordan, his head in the shadow of the rocks, knew that they would not see him, and that it did not matter if they did. He knew they could possibly see the horses in the corral if they were looking for anything in these mountains. If they were not looking for anything, they might still see them, but would naturally take them for some of their own cavalry mounts. Then came a new and louder droning roar, and 3 more Heinkel 111s showed coming steeply, stiffly, lower yet, crossing in rigid formation, their pounding roar approaching in crescendo to an absolute of noise, and then receding as they passed the clearing. Robert Jordan unrolled the bundle of clothing that made his pillow and pulled on his shirt. It was over his head, and he was pulling it down when he heard the next planes coming. And he pulled his trousers on under the robe and lay still as 3 more of the Heinkel bimotor bombers came over. Before they were gone over the shoulder of the mountain, he had buckled on his pistol, rolled the robe and placed it against the rocks, and sat now, close against the rocks, tying his rope-soled shoes when the approaching droning turned to a greater clattering roar than ever before, and 9 more Heinkel light bombers came in echelons, hammering the sky apart as they went over. Robert Jordan slipped along the rocks to the mouth of the cave where one of the brothers, Pablo, the gypsy, Anselmo, Augustine, and the woman stood in the mouth looking out. "Have there been planes like this before?" he asked.
"Never," said Pablo. "Get in, they will see thee."
The sun had not yet hit the mouth of the cave. It was just now shining on the meadow by the stream, and Robert Jordan knew they could not be seen in the dark early morning shadow of the trees and the solid shade the rocks made, but he went in the cave in order not to make them nervous.
"There are many," the woman said.
"And there will be more," Robert Jordan said.
"How do you know?" Pablo asked suspiciously.
"Those, just now, will have pursuit planes with them." Just then they heard them, the higher whining drone, and as they passed at about 5,000 feet, Robert Jordan counted 15 Fiats in echelon of echelons, like a wild goose flight of the V-shaped 3s. In the cave entrance their faces all looked very sober, and Robert Jordan said, "You have not seen this many planes?"
"Never," said Pablo.
"There are not many at Segovia?"
"Never has there been. We have seen 3 usually. Sometimes 6 of the chasers. Perhaps 3 junkers, the big ones with the 3 motors, with the chasers with them. Never have we seen planes like this."
It is bad, Robert Jordan thought. This is really bad. Here is a concentration of planes, which means something very bad. I must listen for them to unload. But no, they cannot have brought up the troops yet for the attack. Certainly not before tonight or tomorrow night, certainly not yet. Certainly they will not be moving anything at this hour. He could still hear the receding drone. He looked at his watch. By now they should be over the lines, the first ones anyway. He pushed the knob that set the second hand clicking and watched it move around. No, perhaps not yet. By now. Yes,
well over by now. 250 miles an hour for those 111s anyway. 5 minutes would carry them there. By now they're well beyond the pass with Castile all yellow and tawny beneath them now in the morning, the yellow crossed by white roads and spotted with the small villages and the shadows of the Heingels moving over the land as the shadows of sharks pass over a sandy floor of the ocean. There was no bump, bump, bumping thud of bombs. His watch ticked on. They're going on to Colmenar, to Escorial, or to the flying field at Manzanares El Real, he thought, with the old castle above the lake with the ducks and the reeds, and the fake airfield just behind the real field with the dummy planes, not quite hidden, their props turning in the wind. That's where they must be headed. They can't know about the attack, he told himself, and something in him said, why can't they? They've known about all the others.
Do you think they saw the horses? Pablo asked.
Those weren't looking for horses, Robert Jordan said.
But did they see them?
Not unless they were asked to look for them.
Could they see them?
Probably not, Robert Jordan said. Unless the sun were on the trees.
It is on them very early, Pablo said miserably.
I think they have other things to think of besides thy horses, Robert Jordan said. It was 8 minutes since he had pushed the lever on the stopwatch, and there was still no sound of bombing. What do you do with the watch? The woman asked.
I listen where they have gone.
Oh, she said. At 10 minutes he stopped looking at the watch, knowing it would be too far away to hear now, even allowing a minute for the sound to travel, and said to Anselmo, I would speak to thee. Anselmo came out of the cave mouth, and they walked a little way from the entrance and stood beside a pine tree. ¿Qué tal? Robert Jordan asked him. How goes it?
All right.
Hast thou eaten?
No, no one has eaten.
Eat then, and take something to eat at midday. I want you to go to watch the road. Make a note of everything that passes both up and down the road.
I do not write.
There is no need to. Robert Jordan took out 2 leaves from his notebook, and with his knife cut 1 inch from the end of his pencil. Take this, and make a mark for tanks thus. He drew a slanted tank, and then a mark for each one, and when there are 4, cross the 4 strokes for the 5th.
In this way we count also.
Good. Make another mark, 2 wheels and a box for trucks. If they are empty, make a circle. If they are full of troops, make a straight mark. Mark for guns, big ones thus, small ones thus. Mark for cars, mark for ambulances, thus, 2 wheels and a box with a cross on it. Mark for troops on foot by companies, like this, see? A little square, and then mark beside it. Mark for cavalry, like this, you see, like a horse, a box with 4 legs. That is a troop of 20 horse, you understand? Each troop a mark.
Yes, it is ingenious.
Now, he drew 2 large wheels with circles around them, and a short line for a gun barrel. These are anti-tanks. They have rubber tires. Mark for them. These are anti-aircraft. 2 wheels with the gun barrel slanted up. Mark for them also. Do you understand? Have you seen such guns?
Yes, Anselmo said. Of course.
It is clear. Take the gypsy with you that he will know from what point you will be watching so you may be relieved. Pick a place that is safe, not too close, and from where you can see well and comfortably. Stay until you are relieved.
I understand.
Good. And that when you come back, I should know everything that moved upon the road. 1 paper is for movement up, 1 is for movement down the road. They walked over toward the cave.
Send Raphael to me, Robert Jordan said, and waited by the tree.
He watched Anselmo go into the cave, the blanket falling behind him. The gypsy sauntered out, wiping his mouth with his hand.
¿Qué tal? The gypsy said. Did you divert yourself last night?
I slept.
Less bad, the gypsy said and grinned. Have you a cigarette?
Listen, Robert Jordan said, and felt in his pocket for the cigarettes. I wish you to go with Anselmo to a place from which he will observe the road. There you will leave him, noting the place in order that you may guide me to it, or guide whoever will relieve him later. You will then go to where you can observe the sawmill, and note if there are any changes in the post there.
What changes?
How many men are there now?
8. The last I knew?
See how many are there now. See at what intervals the guard is relieved at that bridge.
Intervals?
How many hours the guard stays on, and at what time a change is made.
I have no watch.
Take mine. He unstrapped it.
What a watch, Raphael said admiringly. Look at what complications. Such a watch should be able to read and write. Look at what complications of numbers. It's a watch to end watches.
Don't fool with it, Robert Jordan said. Can you tell time?
Why not? 12 o'clock midday? Hunger. 12 o'clock midnight? Sleep. 6 o'clock in the morning? Hunger. 6 o'clock at night? Drunk. With luck, 10 o'clock at night?
Shut up, Robert Jordan said. You don't need to be a clown. I want you to check on the guard at the big bridge and the post on the road below in the same manner as the post and the guard at the sawmill and the small bridge.
It is much work, the gypsy smiled. You are sure there is no one you would rather send than me?
No, Raphael, it is very important that you should do it very carefully and keeping out of sight with care.
I believe I will keep out of sight, the gypsy said. Why do you tell me to keep out of sight? You think I want to be shot?
Take things a little seriously, Robert Jordan said. This is serious.
Thou askest me to take things seriously? After what thou didst last night? When thou needest to kill a man and instead did what you did? You are supposed to kill one, not make one. When we have just seen the sky full of airplanes of a quantity to kill us back to our grandfathers and forward to all unborn grandsons, including all cats, goats, and bedbugs? Airplanes making a noise to curdle the milk in your mother's breasts as they pass over darkening the sky and roaring like lions, and you ask me to take things seriously? I take them too seriously already.
All right, said Robert Jordan, and laughed, and put his hand on the gypsy's shoulder. Don't take them too seriously, then. Now finish your breakfast and go.
And thou? The gypsy asked. What do you do?
I go to see El Sordo.
After those airplanes, it is very possible that thou wilt find nobody in the whole mountains, the gypsy said. There must have been many people sweating the big drop this morning when those passed.
Those have other work than hunting gorillas.
Yes,
the gypsy said, then shook his head.
But when they care to undertake that work...
Que va, Robert Jordan said. Those are the best of the German light bombers. They do not send those after gypsies.
They give me a horror, Raphael said. Of such things, yes, I am frightened.
They go to bomb an airfield, Robert Jordan told him as they went into the cave. I am almost sure they go for that. What do you say? The woman of Pablo asked. She poured him a bowl of coffee and handed him a can of condensed milk. There is milk? What luxury. There is everything, she said. And since the plains, there is much fear. Where did you say they went? Robert Jordan dripped some of the thick milk into his coffee from the slit cut in the can, wiped the can on the rim of the cup, and stirred the coffee until it was light brown. They go to bomb an airfield, I believe. They might go to Escorial and Colmenar, perhaps all three.
That they should go a long way and keep away from here, Pablo said.
And why are they here now? The woman asked. What brings them now? Never have we seen such planes, nor in such quantity. Do they prepare an attack? What movement was there on the road last night? Robert Jordan asked. The girl Maria was close to him, but he did not look at her. You, the woman said. Fernando, you were in La Granja last night. What movement was there?
Nothing.
A short, open-faced man of about 35 with a cast in one eye, whom Robert Jordan had not seen before, answered.
A few camions, as usual. Some cars. No movement of troops while I was there.
You go into La Granja every night? Robert Jordan asked him.
I or another, Fernando said. Someone goes.
They go for the news, for tobacco, for small things, the woman said. We have people there?
Yes, why not? Those who work the power plant. Some others.
What was the news?
Pues nada. There was nothing. It still goes badly in the north. That is not news. In the north it has gone badly now since the beginning.
Did you hear anything from Segovia?
No, hombre, I did not ask.
Do you go into Segovia?
Sometimes,
Fernando said.
But there is a danger. There are controls where they ask you for your papers.
Do you know the airfield?
No, hombre. I know where it is, but I was never close to it. There is much asking for papers.
No one spoke about these planes last night.
In La Granja? Nobody. But they will talk about them tonight, certainly. They talked about the broadcast of Chiepo de Llano. Nothing more? Oh, yes, it seems that the Republic is preparing an offensive.
That what?
that the Republic is preparing an offensive.
Where?
It is not certain. Perhaps here, perhaps for another part of the Sierra. Hast thou heard of it?
They say this in La Granja?
Yes, hombre. I had forgotten it, but there is always much talk of offensives.
Where does this talk come from?
Where? Why, from different people. The officers speak in the cafes in Segovia and Avila, and the waiters note it. The rumors come running. Since some time they speak of an offensive by the Republic in these parts.
By the Republic or by the fascists?
By the Republic. If it were by the fascists, all would know of it. No, this is an offensive of quite some size. Some say there are two. One here and the other over the Alto de León near the Escorial. Have you heard aught of this?
What else did you hear?
Nada, hombre. Nothing. Oh, yes, there was some talk that the Republicans would try to blow up the bridges, if there was to be an offensive. But the bridges are guarded.
Art thou joking? Robert Jordan said, sipping his coffee.
No, hombre, said Fernando.
This one doesn't joke, the woman said. Bad luck that he doesn't. Then, said Robert Jordan, thank you for all the news. Did you hear nothing more?
No. They talk, as always, of troops to be sent to clear out these mountains. There is some talk that they are on the way, that they have been sent already from Valladolid. But they always talk in that way. It is not to give any importance to.
And thou, the woman of Pablo, said to Pablo almost viciously, with thy talk of safety. Pablo looked at her reflectively and scratched his chin. Thou, he said, and thy bridges.
What bridges?
Asked Fernando cheerfully. Stupid, the woman said to him. Thickhead, tonto. Take another cup of coffee and try to remember more news.
Don't be angry, Pilar,
Fernando said calmly and cheerfully.
Neither should one become alarmed at rumors. I have told thee and this comrade all that I remember.
You don't remember anything more? Robert Jordan asked.
No, Fernando said with dignity. And I am fortunate to remember this, because, since it was but rumors, I paid no attention to any of it.
Then there may have been more.
Yes, it is possible. But I paid no attention. For a year I have heard nothing but rumors.
Robert Jordan heard a quick, control-breaking sniff of laughter from the girl, Maria, who was standing behind him.
Tell us one more rumor, Fernandito, she said,
and then her shoulders shook again.
If I could remember, I would not, Fernando said. It is beneath a man's dignity to listen and give importance to rumors.
And with this we will save the Republic, the woman said. No, you will save it by blowing bridges, Pablo told her.
Go, said Robert Jordan to Anselmo and Raphael, if you have eaten.
We go now, the old man said, and the two of them stood up.
Robert Jordan felt a hand on his shoulder. It was Maria.
Thou shouldst eat, she said, and let her hand rest there. Eat well, so that thy stomach can support more rumors.
The rumors have taken the place of the appetite.
No, it should not be so. Eat this now before more rumors come.
She put the bowl before him.
Do not make a joke of me, Fernando said to her. I am thy good friend, Maria.
I do not joke at thee, Fernando. I only joke with him, and he should eat or he will be hungry.
We should all eat, Fernando said. Pilar, what passes that we are not served?
Nothing, man, the woman of Pablo said, and filled his bowl with the meat stew. Eat. Yes, that's what you can do. Eat now.
It is very good, Pilar,
Fernando said, all dignity intact.
Thank you, said the woman. Thank you, and thank you again.
Are you angry at me?
Fernando asked.
No. Eat. Go ahead and eat.
I will, said Fernando. Thank you.
Robert Jordan looked at Maria, and her shoulders started shaking again, and she looked away. Fernando ate steadily, a proud and dignified expression on his face, the dignity of which could not be affected even by the huge spoon that he was using, or the slight dripping of juice from the stew which ran from the corners of his mouth.
"Do you like the food?" the woman of Pablo asked him.
"Yes, Pilar,"
he said with his mouth full.
"It is the same as usual."
Robert Jordan felt Maria's hand on his arm and felt her fingers tighten with delight.
"It is for that that you like it?" the woman asked Fernando.
"Yes," she said, "I see. The stew, as usual, como siempre. Things are bad in the north, as usual. An offensive here, as usual. That troops come to hunt us out, as usual.
You could serve as a monument to as usual.
But the last two are only rumors, Pilar.
Spain, the woman of Pablo said bitterly, then turned to Robert Jordan. Do they have people such as these in other countries?
There are no other countries like Spain, Robert Jordan said politely.
You are right, Fernando said. There is no other country in the world like Spain.
Hast thou ever seen any other country? The woman asked him.
Nay, said Fernando, nor do I wish to.
You see, the woman of Pablo said to Robert Jordan.
Fernandito, Maria said to him, tell us of the time thee went to Valencia. I did not like Valencia.
Why? Maria asked, and pressed Robert Jordan's arm again.
Why did thee not like it? The people had no manners, and I could not understand them. All they did was shout che at one another.
Could they understand thee? Maria asked.
They pretended not to, Fernando said. And what did thee there? I left without even seeing the sea, Fernando said. I did not like the people.
Oh, get out of here, you old maid, the woman of Pablo said. Get out of here before you make me sick. In Valencia I had the best time of my life. Vamos! Valencia. Don't talk to me of Valencia.
What did thee there? Maria asked.
The woman of Pablo sat down at the table with a bowl of coffee, a piece of bread, and a bowl of the stew.
¿Qué? What did we there? I was there when Finito had a contract for 3 fights at the feria. Never have I seen so many people. Never have I seen cafes so crowded. For hours it would be impossible to get a seat, and it was impossible to board the tram cars. In Valencia there was movement all day and all night.
But what did you do? Maria asked.
All things, the woman said. We went to the beach, and lay in the water, and boats with sails were hauled up out of the sea by oxen. The oxen driven to the water until they must swim, then harnessed to the boats, and when they found their feet staggering up the sand, 10 yokes of oxen dragging a boat with sails out of the sea in the morning with the line of the small waves breaking on the beach. That is Valencia.
But what did thee besides watch oxen?
We ate in pavilions on the sand. Pastries made of cooked and shredded fish, and red and green peppers, and small nuts like grains of rice. Pastries delicate and flaky, and the fish of a richness that was incredible. Prawns fresh from the sea sprinkled with lime juice. They were pink and sweet, and there were 4 bites to a prawn. Of those we ate many. Then we ate paella with fresh seafood, clams in their shells, mussels, crayfish, and small eels. Then we ate even smaller eels alone, cooked in oil, and as tiny as bean sprouts, and curled in all directions, and so tender they disappeared in the mouth without chewing. All the time drinking a white wine, cold, light and good, at 30 centimos the bottle. And for an end, melon. That is the home of the melon.
The melon in Castile is better, Fernando said.
Que va, said the woman of Pablo. The melon of Castile is for self-abuse. The melon of Valencia for eating. When I think of those melons long as one's arm, green like the sea and crisp and juicy to cut and sweeter than the early morning in summer, ay, when I think of those smallest eels, tiny, delicate, and in mounds on the plate. Also the beer in pitchers all through the afternoon, the beer sweating in its coldness in pitchers the size of water jugs.
And what did thee when not eating nor drinking?
We made love in the room with the strip-wood blinds hanging over the balcony, and a breeze through the opening of the top of the door which turned on hinges. We made love there, the room dark in the daytime from the hanging blinds, and from the streets there was the scent of the flower market, and the smell of burned powder from the firecrackers of the traca that ran through the streets exploding each noon during the feria. It was a line of fireworks that ran through all the city, the firecrackers linked together, and the explosions running along on poles and wires of the tramways, exploding with great noise, and a jumping from pole to pole with a sharpness and a cracking of explosion you could not believe. We made love and then sent for another pitcher of beer with the drops of its coldness on the glass, and when the girl brought it, I took it from the door, and I placed the coldness of the pitcher against the back of Finito as he lay, now asleep, not having wakened when the beer was brought. And he said, no, Pilar, no, woman, let me sleep. And I said, no, wake up and drink this to see how cold. And he drank without opening his eyes, and went to sleep again. And I lay with my back against a pillow at the foot of the bed, and watched him sleep,
brown and dark-haired, and young and quiet in his sleep, and drank the whole pitcher, listening now to the music of a band that was passing. "You," she said to Pablo, "do you know aught of such things?"
"We have done things together," Pablo said.
"Yes," the woman said, "why not? And thou wert more man than Finito in your time. But never did we go to Valencia. Never did we lie in bed together and hear a band pass in Valencia."
"It was impossible," Pablo told her. "We have had no opportunity to go to Valencia. Thou knowest that, if thou wilt be reasonable. But with Finito neither did thee blow up any train."
"No," said the woman. "That is what is left to us."
"The train, yes. Always the train. No one can speak against that. That remains of all the laziness, sloth, and failure. That remains of the cowardice of this moment. There were many other things before, too. I do not want to be unjust. But no one can speak against Valencia, either. You hear me?"
"I did not like it," Fernando said quietly. "I did not like Valencia."
"Yet they speak of the mule as stubborn," the woman said. "Clean up, Maria, that we may go." As she said this, they heard the first sound of the planes returning. Chapter 9. They stood in the mouth of the cave and watched them. The bombers were high now, in fast, ugly arrowheads beating the sky apart with the noise of their motors. "They are shaped like sharks," Robert Jordan thought. "The wide-finned, sharp-nosed sharks of the Gulf Stream. But these, wide-finned in silver, roaring, the light mist of their propellers in the sun, these do not move like sharks. They move like no thing there has ever been. They move like mechanized doom." "You ought to write," he told himself. "Maybe you will again sometime." He felt Maria holding to his arm. She was looking up, and he said to her, "What do they look like to you, Guapa?"
"I don't know," she said. "Death, I think."
"They look like planes to me," the woman of Pablo said. "Where are the little ones?" "They may be crossing at another part," Robert Jordan said. "Those bombers are too fast to have to wait for them, and have come back alone. We never follow them across the lines to fight. There aren't enough planes to risk it." Just then, three Heinkel fighters in V formation came low over the clearing, coming toward them, just over the treetops, like clattering, wing-tilting, pinch-nosed, ugly toys, to enlarge suddenly, fearfully to their actual size, pouring past in a whining roar. They were so low that from the cave mouth all of them could see the pilots, helmeted, goggled, a scarf blowing back from behind the patrol leader's head.
"Those can see the horses," Pablo said.
"Those can see thy cigarette butts," the woman said. "Let fall the blanket." No more planes came over. The others must have crossed farther up the range, and when the droning was gone, they went out of the cave into the open. The sky was empty now, and high and blue and clear.
"It seems as though they were a dream that you wake from," Maria said to Robert Jordan.
There was not even the last, almost unheard hum that comes like a finger faintly touching and leaving and touching again after the sound is gone almost past hearing.
"They are no dream, and you go in and clean up," Bilar said to her.
"What about it?" She turned to Robert Jordan. "Should we ride or walk?" Pablo looked at her and grunted.
"As you will," Robert Jordan said.
"Then let us walk," she said.
"I would like it for the liver."
"Riding is good for the liver?"
"Yes, but hard on the buttocks. We will walk. And thou," she turned to Pablo, "go down and count thy beasts, and see they have not flown away with any."
"Do you want a horse to ride?" Pablo asked Robert Jordan.
"No, many thanks."
"What about the girl?"
"Better for her to walk," Pilar said. "She'll get stiff in too many places, and serve for nothing."
Robert Jordan felt his face reddening.
"Did you sleep well?" Pilar asked, then said, "It is true that there is no sickness. There could have been. I know not why there wasn't. There probably still is God, after all, although we have abolished him."
"Go on," she said to Pablo. "This does not concern thee. This is of people younger than thee, made of other material. Get on."
Then to Robert Jordan, "Augustine is looking after thy things. We go when he comes."
It was a clear, bright day, and warm now in the sun. Robert Jordan looked at the big, brown-faced woman with her kind, widely set eyes and her square, heavy face, lined and pleasantly ugly, the eyes merry, but the face sad until the lips moved. He looked at her, and then at the man, heavy and stolid, moving off through the trees toward the corral.